Hello, good evening and welcome to episode 12 of Magic the Judging, where we're going to bring you the April edition of Magic Judge Monthly. It's April 2012, in case I happen to keep this series going on for longer than a year, which would be quite amazing if I managed that, wouldn't it? I'd be quite impressed. Oh, feeling a bit low. There we go. That's better. More centred and stuff. Ah, hello everyone. Right, the link you are going to need today, if you want to follow what I'm reading from at home, is internationalmagicjudges.net, www.internationalmagicjudges.net. For the benefit of you guys who are in the chat at the moment, I'll be pasting in a link directly to the article I'm talking about. If you're watching this after the fact, then put me on pause and go to internationalmagicjudges.net and you will find a web page looking something like this. This is the current state of international magic judges. It's quite a nice little piece of work that the Italians mainly have put together. We've got mailing list summaries, we've got links to the Judge Centre, to the Judge Wiki. Hi Christian, you're in the chat. Hey, your wiki is nicely featured on here. We've got the rules by example, we've got policy by example, we've got links to the DCI family, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Everything that's in small down here can't be too important, right? Right? The idea is that everything you would want to cover magic-wise is down here. There's a judge cast. There's a link to Ask the Judge in IRC. There's event coverage. There's the daily, the mothership, as I call it, the daily Magic the Gathering channel. There's Wizards Community. There's MTG Salvation. There's Channel Fireball. There's Black Border. There's everybody. They're all down here. And yes, there's some really awesome stuff here. I'm hoping this will work. If I click on International Magic Judges here. Oh, it's opened up in a new window. I wasn't expecting that. Never mind. Then it will tell you a bunch of the things that are being worked on, one of which is Magic Judge Monthly. And that is what I'm bringing to you this time. If you scroll down here, there's at the top is just an explanation about what Magic Judge Monthly is all about. The point of it is to bring judges back up to speed who maybe have been forced to like step away from the scene for a little while. The idea is we condense a month's worth of activity on the DCI Judge mailing list or the MTG rules. No, just the DCI Judge mailing list. Basically, bring you all the activity that's happened in the global judge community over the last month, and we try to get it to you in less than an hour. So, ideal for catching up, staying on the scene. If you scroll down a little bit on that page, you'll find different issues. You've got April, March, February, January, going way back. This one goes back as far as February of last year. The audio version is a fairly new development, which I'm bringing to you now. If you hit the read all on there, it should take you to the article, and that is what gets you to the link that I just pasted in the chat. So everyone in the chat watching live, you're well ahead of everybody already. And here we are. This is the Magic Judge Monthly for April 2012. I'm pretty sure this is going to be less than readable on the stream, but you can at least see what I'm scrolling through. And I'll be honest, your only other option to watch as we're going along is me just looking at the camera and doing blah, 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 scrolling and scrolling and looking. It's not going to be so great. I mean, I realise you all do want to look at my lovely collection of board games behind me. But I'm gonna keep the focus on the website so you can kind of see what I'm talking about. Hopefully this will work out well, because I'll be forced to get everything out nice and verbally for you all, so it's all on the audio stream. And what we're going to try to do is download this episode afterwards, transcode, do I mean transcode? I probably do. Or just strip out the audio, basically. Just take the audio, pop it up as a podcast, have it available through iTunes, and everything be hunky-dory. So let's get on with some content, shall we? Table of contents that we've got here. So this is what will be coming up in this issue of the Magic Judge Monthly. We've got updated documents, we've got updated projects, judge articles, new version of a judge booklet, I'm bringing to you all those kind of updates. Some words about the new and improved judge projects that you might want to get involved with or you might want to make use of. For the judge program, we're having a look. We'll see about the anniversary judges who've been judging for like 5 or 10 years now. We shall be looking at judge advancements. We shall be looking at the judge of the week section. Then we'll go into policy work. There have been some big changes this month. We are going to actually finally get around to talking about lapsing triggers, as they've had a little while to bed in. We've got some other things that are what's the difference between a mind trick and actual fraud, and so on. And finally, a quick rundown of the events that were in April and May. In April, we had GP Manchester, but there's a few more coming up in May, including Pro Tour Avacyn Restored in Barcelona, which I'm going to be at. So if any of you are also going to be in Barcelona, then have a virtual high five. I am going to have to cut back to the camera. There we go. High five. Woo. See you in Barcelona. Be awesome. Looking forward to it. So, on with the stream. First of all, there's the Avacyn Restored FAQ. The FAQ is out. So if you have not managed to read this already and you have any questions to do with cards that are in the Avacyn Restored set, the FAQ is normally a good port of call because it introduces entire new mechanics to you. Like, what have we got in Avacyn Restored? We've got Soul Bond. We've got questions to do with it with the flickering. I mean, Momentary Blink from Time Spiral was a great example of the kind of stuff that's coming out with this. It's a good first port of call for you to read through and see just what the new set has brought us. Obviously, at some point, it will become your general knowledge of the game. You'll just know it, and you won't necessarily remember that Soul Bond is from Avacyn Restored, but you'll just remember how it works because it's one of these things that you worked with a while ago. And so on. But whilst it's fresh, the FAQ is a great resource to dip into and catch up on new mechanics, which is fantastic. We have, because the FAQ's out, but oh, we also have updated versions of the MTR, that's the Magic Tournament Rules, and the IPG. Ryan Stapleton has updated his mobile devices. Oh, look at that. Can you? Oh, wow. That's amazing. I hover over Ryan Stapleton's name and you get a little picture of him. I hope that's big enough for you to make out where you are. I don't think I can do anything to make that any bigger. Oh, no, can't think of anything on top of my head. So let's move on. It's the IPG, the JAR. That's the Judging at Regular document. The MTR, the Hold the Oracle, the Comp Rules, the Invite Policy, and all the other stuff. All loads of whole other mobile documents. They're all available at the Handhelds Wiki page, which is on the wiki on IMJ, so wiki.internationalmagicjudges.net slash index.php slash handhelds, we'll get you to that one. Or Ryan's website, his own website, which is at www.bluewizard.net. I'm just going to have a brief look over there now. Bluewizard.net. Does that take us straight into the judge stuff, or do we have a whole bunch of other things to navigate through? Now we've got magic events at the top, magic judge resources. We click through there, and I'm sure we're going to find, yeah, all sorts of updated files and judge resources. Fantastic. Great work, Ryan. I've definitely had cause to use your mobile documents before, so fantastic. Awesome work. Right. Ryan Stapleton also has another project going here. There is a new document released for the flashcard project. So back on the same website I was just on, the comprehensive rules have been posted. Interesting. Okay. So Tasha Jameson and Alex Bastecki have been involved with this. I'm gonna click on this link because I want to know more about this. Can anyone in the chat tell me what this is? What the flashcard project for the whole of the CR? Really? Wow. Okay, I'm going to be coming back to that when I have a little more information on exactly what that is. But that sounds awesome. So we have the front of a set of flashcards. Oh, look at this. You have questions on the front, like what rel events should you use the Judging at Regular document for? Or at what point is it forbidden to talk during drafting? And then on the flip side, on the back, quickly download a PDF. You've got some answers, and presumably these match up somehow. Give the player a stern chat and let him or her know how you want events run. Let the player know that if he or she does not stop, it will lead to his or her ejection. Well, that's going to be the answer to something. Presumably, this is really easy to sync up. Awesome. I'm loving the look of that. Cool. Right. Well, if you're interested in these flashcards as study guides for studying comprehensive rules, either for one of your mentors or one of your mentees or for yourself, to be honest, if you're printing out tools for one of your mentors, they're probably doing it wrong. Then, yeah, give Ryan's website at www.bluewizard.net. Give that a visit. Awesome. So, Philip Schultz reminds us what new judge articles came out in March. We had, is it? Yes, sorry. In March, we had the First Time Guide by Ryan Dobash, Pete Yarn, and Jeff Morrow. I'm guessing, I'm clicking through just to double check that this is a guide to, yes, guide to being a floor judge at a GP for the first time. So, if you're interested in GPs, and or you're going to a GP soon and it's going to be your first time, have a look there. Mackenzie Stratford brought us a tournament announcements article about exactly what it is you should be announcing at the beginning of a tournament, and some good hints and tips for getting your message across. I found in GP Turin, I think it was Turin, that I did a good job of getting my pre-tournament messages across using a kind of a improvised sign language as I was going, and I got some comments on that, which indicated that it really helped get the message across. Yeah, it's interesting stuff. Riccardo Tessitore has brought us an article called "Damage on the Stack." It's on blackborder.com, and why is it called "Damage on the Stack"? It's because exactly about covering all the rules changes that we've had over the years. Oh, that's awesome. So that you can see, right, people who have been out of the game for a while might be coming back to the game believing that things work a certain way when actually things are a bit different. Also, there's an event report of GP Madrid in there. I always love Ricardo's event reports. They've got some lovely details in, some good sets of questions, and really good, interesting scenarios get covered. And you kind of know that they're all real because he's doing this in the context of a GP itself. So that's awesome. And also, oh, yep, another article by Ricardo about GP Indianapolis involving High Tide and Trinisphere and the philosophy of backups. They were all articles in March. We also had new ones in April. Matteo Caligari and Christian Gavrilovic, they have written an article that is all about welcoming level twos to being level two. So there's a lovely article there. If you have been recently promoted to L2, or if you want to better understand what's expected from a starting level two, then you might find some useful information in that article. That's again, that one's on the Judge Wiki. Pierre Lacquière wrote an article that's on internationalmagicjudges.net. There's Pierre, lovely specimen of a judge there. That sounded a bit weird, didn't it? Oh well, never mind. Good job this is live, and I can go back and edit it later. He has written an article about exactly what a level 3 judge is, and he interviewed a bunch of people to get a good picture about what's required for a level 3 judge. And I know because I was one of the interviewees at some point. I know this article's been a long time in the making. Definitely a good read if you are interested in walking the path or just knowing a bit more about what us types up in the higher levels get up to. Ricardo Tessitore has another GP report. This time it's GP Manchester, and he also talks a lot about lapsing abilities. I'm actually going to open that one up in a new tab in my browser so that as soon as I finish with this stream, I'm going to read it because I haven't got around to reading that one yet. And I do love catching up on Ricardo's articles, especially as I enjoyed Manchester so much. I really want to see it from another judge's point of view. Someone in the chat has pointed out this Ricardo guy. He seems to travel around a bit, doesn't he? GP Indianapolis, GP Manchester. What's going on here? Yeah, Ricardo is one of our level five judges from Italy. Fantastic guy. If you ever do get a chance to meet him and introduce yourself, then please, please do so. We have the DVD commentary on Missed Triggers by Toby Elliott, one of our other level 5 judges. Let's have a look at that when it loads up. Again, it's been posted to International Magic Judges. I think I'm getting the idea across now that a lot of these judge articles are showing up on International Magic Judges. This really is becoming the website to go to for everything that you care about. Well, everything that you care about in the judge community anyway. I'm sure some of you care about things outside of magic. I've heard that's a thing. The DVD commentary on Mistriggers is, well, it's kind of what it sounds like. If you ever bought a DVD and listened to the director tell you about why he made this film or why he cut a certain shot a certain way or something along those lines, well, this is what this article is about. It's not so much about what the new Mistrigger policy is, although you know, that's covered and it's in there. It's a lot more about why is it this way? How did we get here? How are wizards involved in this decision? How are the high-level judges involved in this decision? How are the shrines involved in this decision? If you want to know why we are now handling Mistriggers the way we are, then please read Toby Elliott's DVD commentary on that. If you want to know a bit more about lapsing triggers, I believe that's coming up in the policy section later, so stay tuned. What else do we have here? More judge articles. It's fantastic. So many judge articles coming out every month. It's great. I'm really, really grateful to every judge in the judge program that lends their knowledge back to everyone else by actually bothering to sit down and tap an article out. It's not as easy as it looks. So I do have great appreciation for those guys who do sit down and actually bash something out. That said, if you're passionate enough about a certain topic and you just sit down and get going, it's amazing what you can achieve. I'm on 12 episodes of this stream, which must be running in for about 12 hours worth of me talking about magic. Now, if someone came up to me and said, 12 hours of talking about magic, you must be bonkers or something, I would say, well, actually, I am totally bonkers. But no, even I didn't believe I could talk about magic for 12 hours comfortably. Turns out you break it up, you do an hour a week, you get there without even knowing it. Moving on, Jeremy Granat. Granat? French name fail there. I'm going to go with Granat. And I have an article from him called Handling Player Miscommunication. Doesn't this happen in every tournament you're at? There he is. Jeremy Granat. I knew the name. He starts his article saying, who hasn't been called to a table because the player did something without communicating it explicitly enough? The other player assumed something completely different and now you've got to get there and work out what on earth is going on. Policy isn't going to hack it, really. The rules aren't going to help you. Experience is the card that that gets played in these situations. You have just got to work out what is going on. My favourite version of this was in something like round 4 of World Championships. It was one of the American World Championships. I want to say Memphis. I think it was that one. And I got called to a dispute where one player believed he was on 11 life. His opponent believed that... And his opponent believed he was actually on 12 life. And it was really important because there was an attack for 11 damage coming in on the table. So, pretty important call, that one. And absolutely no way that any document is going to help you with that one. Except this one, this article on handling player miscommunication. If you've had a read of that, you at least you have some tools on your side, some weapons with which to solve this particular problem. You can also actually find a list of judge articles on the wiki itself. I'll give the full URL for this one. So again, it's wiki, and for those of you who don't know about wikis, it's spelled W-I-K-I. So, wiki.internationalmagicjudges.net/index.php/. Now this comes as three words with underscores in the middle. judge_article_index. And I assume that you can get there through the front page. Let's see if I can work that out. Let's open up a new window and go to internationalmagicjudges.net, which you can see my browser just nicely saved on me. There's Judge Wiki over there. Am I going to be able to find the Judge Article Index? Is it here? We've got stuff during the tournament, judge family, wiki improvement, learning materials, judge articles, there it is. Bum, bum, bum. I found it. Is that the link to the index? Is it? Did I find it? Judge article archives, okay. There's a bunch of them there. You can see how you can find yourself around. I'm pleased with how this wiki's holding together. It's great to work your way through and just see, can I navigate from one place to another? And I've already got Christian Gorilovich in the chat going, okay, I think I need to do a bit of work on making this easier to navigate. Brilliant. Love you, Christian. Couple of comments in the chat talking about these streams being helpful for getting towards level 2. We've got Kim Warren is giving Ricardo a bit of a run for his money with the amount of miles covered this year. Definitely. She's also going to be in Barcelona. I'm looking forward to that. Christian points out that he's submitted an article, a stream topic suggestion to me. He wants me to cover replacement effects, I believe. That's sitting in my email box waiting for me to get around to. I believe it's going to be the topic of next week's stream. Which reminds me at this point that should you have a request yourself, maybe you have a mentee that's struggling with a little bit, struggling with a part of the rules or policy, although you know I'm very much aware that I haven't gone on to policy with a stream so far, and I have just been sticking on the conference of rules thus far. If they have a particular problem, then I'll go and research the area and try and present it in an hour-long episode. Well, I always try to beat the hour, but I never quite make it, do I? So Christian asked me to do replacement effects. That's why I'm going to do replacement effects soon, hopefully next week. If you have other suggestions, then let us know. We'll get them on the stream. Maybe you'll inspire someone to write an article about them, so we have them in written form as well. Okay, moving on. So we're past the judge articles section. We've got a new version of the judge booklet, now with lapsing triggers. This is by Martin Kurler. I forget about the history of the judge booklet. I know Uta Cronenberg was involved with this at some point. There's some awesome stuff on the judge booklet. I think I should probably at this stage introduce to you what the judge booklet is. Here's the idea. You can probably see the framework for the page just about if you're watching on the stream. So the idea is you pick what pages that you want in the booklet. So maybe you want a page on, this automatically comes up with a page on lapsing triggers, on announcements, a notes page, penalties, and so on. You hit generate, and what you get is a PDF file, which has this, and my mind was blown when I first saw this. It has a PDF laid out. Now, do you see how the text here is upside down? Maybe you don't, because I need to zoom in for you to be able to see it on the screen. Do you see how the text here, you can see derived information, MTR 4.1, that's upside down. And these pages up here are the right way up. There's a bit about, you can see, plus X plus Y or a beneficial ability. It's definitely talking about lapsing triggers there, isn't it? You get this single page of A4 that's split up into 8 little sub-pages. And the idea is you can cut them out and fold them up into a single booklet that's exactly the right size to pop into your judge shirt. How amazing is that? It is absolutely amazing. I never knew these things existed until someone made a magic judge version of it. And now I can always go to a tournament with information in my pocket, should I wish. I'm probably going to sort that out and take it to Barcelona with me, actually, because I know I'm having trouble keeping the whole definition of lapsing triggers in my head. It's going to be quite important at the professional level, I imagine. So, yeah, the judge booklet, it's been updated to include lapsing triggers. I would really suggest you having a look at those. If there's anything that you know you have trouble sorting out, you have trouble preparing your head judge announcements at the beginning of a tournament, you always do your announcements and then like you get into round one and you kick yourself thinking, oh, I completely forgot to talk about blah blah blah. Well, you can update your own judge booklet, like keep it up to date with what information you need to have to hand actually there in your pocket, folded up nice and neatly. Awesome resource, that one. So thanks very much for Martin Kuhler for getting that one updated. There's a note on the judge booklet to say that the missed trigger flowchart is currently not included because of the IPG changes, making them slightly out of date. Federico Donna did make an updated version, however, of the new missed trigger flowchart. I can't read out that URL because it's made of lots of random letters, but take a look either on the mailing list archives or go on to International Magic Judges and find this very Magic Judge monthly edition that I'm talking you through now, and click the link and you'll be able to find it. If you want to learn more about which cards contain lapsing triggers, then there's also Gathered, which is a spreadsheet brought to you by David Lyford-Smith, who's one of our other level 3s in the UK. We are blessed with a number of them. And he's been working on it for some time, manually going through each of the cards and working out exactly which ones have lapsing triggers and which ones don't. I believe he's got the entire modern format sorted out. Oh yes. DLS is coming up on the site as American. Oh dear. No. He is one of ours. Unless he's moved and not told me or something. He's a UK one. We need to sort that one out. It's an Excel document. It contains the full Oracle data for all non-silver bordered magic cards, including the keywords and the sets they appear in, and now also if any triggered abilities that the card has or creates are lapsing or not. And by the way, I'm reading that, he must have done the whole card set. The last time I looked, he'd only got modern done. If he's extended that to the whole of vintage, that would be utterly amazing. Okay, moving on. I've had a note to say that the February investigations are complete and the suspended players page has been updated. So the suspended players list is on wizards.com. You can probably Google for it if you're particularly interested in the latest up-to-date version of which players are suspended. So that's any investigations that were carried out in February are now complete. I assume that means that March is on the backlog. People will be working through them as I speak. Andy Hett wrote to us about the eligibility lists for WMCQs, the World Magic Cup qualifiers. The best resource for a player's current eligibility is the Planeswalker Points leaderboard. You need to select the correct season, because as soon as we moved on to a new season, that became the default selector on the Planeswalker Points site. So you do need to make sure you're looking at the correct season. And then you can update by region, I think, in order to find exactly who's qualified for what. There is also a flat file list. There's a link to it. Again, you can probably find it by Googling World Magic Cup qualifiers. Scott Larrabee just posted a flat file somewhere. It's very large because lots of people have qualified for WMCQs all over the world. Obviously, you're only going to be interested in your particular country of choice. So make copious use of find in page. Most browsers have it on Control F. So Control F, type your surname in or whatever and see if you're in there. What else do we have? Card of the month, Ricardo Testori again. He does get around a bit, doesn't he? He's talking about international magic judges and the year-long set of tasks that they're working on. Each month they're trying to bring a new part of the website back. And this month, the section of the website that they're bringing online is the Card of the Month. It's a monthly series. The clue's kind of in the name there. Let's have a click on the monthly updates. Let's see what they've got in there. So, Card of the Month. Oh no, hang on. What I've clicked on is telling me what the plan is for migrating everything onto International Magic Judges. That's the monthly updates thing. And with nice big ticks for what's been achieved going through to April and big fat section on what exactly needs to be updated going through to December of this year. Let's see if the Card of the Month section down here, does it exist yet? It must do. Why am I failing to hit the link? Da, 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 da. No, failing to find it. Sorry, guys. I've failed you there. Is it there? Is it there? I think I found the link. Card of the month. There we go. So, card of the month. The cards of the month this year. In January, we had Garrick Relentless. In February, Splinter Twin. And in March, Trinisphere. For each of these, it's our favourite card for the month, with a whole bunch of its most significant interactions. So I'll click on the Trinisphere link. There it is. You see the card on the stream? I'm sure you can. As long as Trinisphere is untapped, each spell that would cost less than 3 mana to play costs 3 mana to play. And so this brings in all sorts of concepts for you to talk about. We could talk about what mana cost means, converted mana cost, total alternative cost. I brought up some of these in my stream last week about paying for spells. But here it is with another treatment. You can't go over this topic enough times, it seems. Alternative costs, variable costs, hybrid mana, Phyrexian mana, and there we go. That's it. Lovely, concise little article all about the questions that are brought up by the fact that Trinisphere exists. That's why it's a good choice for card of the month, and that's why you should have a look into those. What else do we have on this section? Address update time. Da-da-da-da. Eric Sorensen, who I don't remember exactly what he does, but I know he's a Wizards guy and he's involved in organised play. Sorry, Eric. I just can't remember what it is, what your title is. It's not on my script here. That well. He tells us that recently a large data merge happened and it might well have overwritten addresses and other information, especially if you updated it recently. So in the event that we need to send you something, it's very important that there's an up-to-date mailing address for everybody. So please go to webapp.wizards.com/personal.aspx. You might want to access that securely, so put HTTPS on the front of that. That's the protocol to use. And please get your current address entered. I'm being told in the chat that Eric is our community manager. Thank you very much, Christian, for keeping me up to date there. Okay, let's move into the projects section for this month. Ricardo invites you to have a look at the Judge Program project list. Let's have a look. What projects do we have? Current projects. Judge Photos. IMJ. The summaries that we're working on right now. The rules.wizards.com rulebook. Seminar library. The administration of the Judge Wiki. Judge article metadata and index. The wiki's in there again? Okay, interesting. An oral judge history. There's loads. There are so many. I can't possibly read all these out. You can see me scrolling past what projects are happening right now. Take time to discover what projects are in progress, who's been working on your favourite project, and send them a message to show them that you like it. We love it. We love that kind of feedback. It makes it really worthwhile doing all this kind of work that we do. If every now and again someone tells us, hey, thanks for that. That was really awesome. This is the main reason I do this stuff live, because I have this lovely chat room at the bottom and I have people constantly telling me that I've just said something wrong, which is fantastic because that kind of interaction is what keeps me going. Same applies to any articles you read. Like them on Facebook. Send the author a short note. These messages really do mean a lot to the hardworking people that keep your judge community together. Michael Weiser and Jürgen Burt are looking for input on running Last Chance Grand Prix trials on Fridays. If you've got any experience with running Last Chance trials on the Friday of a GP, then let them know. Let them know what it is you do that makes them work. Sashi Kumar Balakrishnan is trying to complete the National's head judge list on the Judge Wiki. Have a look and add any missing head judges or player numbers. So I believe this was a brief, like a history project to try to go back over all of the national championships that have happened and fill in who was the head judge for each of them and, if we can possibly get it, estimates of player numbers for each of those nationals. Also, right, I'm going to... Closing today is the solicitation for Grand Prix Shanghai, which is happening in July. Closing tomorrow is the solicitation for the World Magic Cup at Gen Con, which will be happening in August. Later this month, the solicitation for GP Columbus will close. And then going forwards, we have solicitations open for Grand Prix San Jose and Star City Games events in Columbus, Portland, Los Angeles, and Atlanta. If you're interested in judging at any of those, you need to get involved. They're all on dcifamily.org. So head over to dcifamily.org and see which events are currently soliciting your applications. Moving on into the community and program section. So, Helen Bergeau sent a message looking for feedback as we move into like the next evolution of the judge program. I'll just read this verbatim. As you know, we at Wizards of the Coast place a tremendous amount of value in our judges and the important role that you play in the community and with the players. From our recent experience in involving Premier Play, we've been reminded of the importance of reaching out to the community to make sure any changes we make reflect the wishes of the broader community. We invite you to submit your feedback on the judge program. Your ideas will help us shape a better program as we move forward, and we look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for your continued support. And the link goes to www.wizards.com/MTGOP. So, Magic the Gathering Organized Play, I guess. MTGOP. Submit feedback on the judge program, if indeed you have any. Johanna Vertanen compiles a list of the judge anniversaries, and it's archived at their shiny new blog, which is at blogs.magicjudges.org/anniversaries. And this month's featured judge is Olivier Tremel. Nope, I've made the mistake of reading that as if it was a European name and going for Olivier, when in fact it's Oliver. Apologies, Oliver. Oh, God. I have just put my foot so far into my mouth. It's Oliver Tremel from Austria, which is in Europe, and not Australia, which isn't in Europe, which I just read it as after I... I'm going to do that again. This month's featured judge is Oliver Tremel from Austria. Did I get it right that time? Let's hope I did. Oh, crikey. We have a new level 3. Stefan Ledstetter, who is involved in this very Magic Judge Monthly that I'm bringing to you. In fact, he has the editor seat and is doing a fantastic job of it, I may say so. Chris Richter wrote a little about him, saying he became a judge in summer 2009 at Austrian Nationals, and after that quickly became part of the Austrian judge community and remained very active in and around Vienna. Became an L2 in the summer of 2010, and he's now an L3. Well done, Stefan. If you want to hear more about his story, then have a look at the article. Michael Weiser also gave us a full list of the judge advancements. I think this is an update from March, and normally I have a nice little statistic to give you. 103 new level ones in March. 103 new level 1s, 25 new level 2s. That's what we managed in March. I don't know what we happened in April yet. Looking for an update from Michael. So as soon as that appears, you'll hear about it. The Judge of the Week project has resurfaced. And it's back under the Judge blog project. So again, this is at blogs.magicjudges.org. And the Judge of the Week is under /JOTW. In the new blog, you can find all the past entries and you can nominate a judge that you think deserves recognition. Lindsay Hemming got all this off going, got the project off to a great start in the past. The new Judge of the Week team involves Nemesio Bolaños, David Hibbs, Carlos Ho, Harley Morfitt, John Temple, and the announcement was brought out by Jason Wong, so I assume he's involved as well somehow. For those of you on the stream, I think I can give you a whole bunch of pictures there. Well, they're coming up fairly small. No, pictures missing. There's David. Everyone knows Carlos Ho, right? Yeah. There's Harley Morfitt. And there's John Temple, who doesn't have a picture. Just has the judge balance thing. Apparently the numbers for April have been released a couple of days ago. I don't have them in front of me. It was even more judges than that, I'm being told. And we are now worldwide more than 3,000 judges in the global judge program. Isn't that amazing? 3,000 judges. Can you imagine them all in the same room? That'd be amazing. We should organise some kind of event that only judges are allowed to play in, and like host it in the middle of the world. I just said the middle of the world in life. That's, you can tell I'm just working off the top of my brain there. Yeah, worldwide judge only event, that'd be awesome. Let's get back to work, shall we? Jeff Morrow posted a survey for any level 2s out there who are interested in level 3. Please fill out this survey, and the link goes to a Google Docs thing, so I can't read that one out because it just has a massive like junk key in it. Andy Hecht made a similar request at some point. If you'd already filled out that form, you don't need to fill out this one as well. They'll be collected at some point. But it would be interesting for you to email Jeff Morrow off the list and tell him which GPs in 2012 you're on staff for or are planning to apply. Filling in the survey doesn't count as applying for the GP itself, though. You have to actually get the application in. We have another set of recommendations for level 1 and level 2 candidates. Brian Schenk, he's the DCIX manager, and he analyses all of the exam results for any judge exams that are made during the month. And he's able to work out where people by and large are going wrong. So where they're going wrong at the moment is handling triggered abilities correctly, including the timing, targeting and making choices. Finding out what the differences are between the JAR and the IPG. That's important on the judge test, obviously, because if you the judge test tells you that something happens at regular rel, then you should be applying your knowledge about the JAR to that very question. Related to that, how to handle serious problems at regular rel. Knowing the basis of how to handle two-headed giant, which I covered in a stream way back, but it's still relevant. And I believe, actually, one of the reasons I did the two-headed giant stream was because of Brian Schenk's recommendations that people were missing the 2HG questions that are on the judge tests. So, yeah, if you don't know your two-headed giant, or you have a level one candidate that you know who's like a little bit close to the mark, not quite there for getting to level one, get them to go back over these stream archives and have a look at the two-headed giant stream that I've done. Might help. Also, how to declare the damage assignment order for multiple attackers and blockers. New, still feels new. Most people who are active judges now won't have been tested on this, which is why it still feels new. So it's an interesting thing to pick up on. How exactly do you deal with the damage assignment order for multiple attackers and blockers? As an addition, for level 2 candidates, please be sure to take practice exams and review your weak areas, even if you do manage to pass the practice exam. Look over your weaknesses and do the best you can to sort those out. Finding the nearest judge that can help the candidate studying is also recommended. Like, get them involved with a nearby judge. That's the best way to get there. Continuing on, Brian says that when you're generating tests in the judge centre, please use the DCI number for the candidate. There's a lot of mistakes happening because there are lots of people now with the same name. 3,000 people worldwide in the judge programme. And I'm being told that the April figures have 112 new level 1s, 37 new level 2s, and one new level 3. That's what brought us over the 3,000 mark. So it's unsurprising that there's a few of us out there with the same names. So, yes, once if you do make a mistake, it's very difficult to get it edited. So please enter the candidates in by DCI number. A level 1 or level 2 candidate who doesn't pass the exam is required to take a 2-month freezing period. No, that's worded weirdly. They have 2-month cooldown before they can be retested. That 2-month pause also exists for the candidate to generate a practice exam, whether they passed or not. If you think that a candidate could benefit from taking a level 1 practice exam, but they're still in that 2-month cooldown, then you can generate an exam for them, and please do so. but you should discuss the candidate's performance with them and identify specific trouble spots and areas that they should concentrate on learning. Because the test is more of a diagnostic tool to tell you how you're doing. And it's not the best example itself of how to revise for the rules. So use it to know how well you're doing, but don't use it by itself just to try to get better, if you see what I mean. Michael Swagger posted something about misconduct in stores, and we just have a brief note here to say, if you know something's happening in a store and you know it's wrong, please report it privately to your regional coordinator or to your local WPN manager. If you don't know who your local WPN manager is, go through your regional coordinator. They will know. If you are involved in an investigation about a store, you might be contacted. But you don't really have any right to request or expect any private information about that investigation. So, you know, stuff will happen and all the parties involved will have to deal with it. It's just the sad nature of when we have to conduct investigations into misconduct that we can't go spreading details everywhere. I'm sure you all understand. Finally, for this section, there's a poll on the... where is it? Where's the playmat poll? It's on... it's when you log into the Judge Centre, when you go to judge.wizards.com. There's a poll for a playmat that will be given out to all Level 2 judges. And you have to be on the list of Level 2 judges at June the 21st. So if you think you're close to levelling up and you want a shiny new playmat, then you have somewhere in the region of 6 weeks to get that level up. So get ahead, get there. If you're already a level 2 judge, by all means, vote on which playmat you like. I think the balance is proving to be very popular. I think you saw it earlier when I tried to show you this picture of John Temple. You got this balance artwork. Could make a really cool playmat. There were other options. Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm being told that the poll for which mat is going to come out is actually over, but we haven't had a result yet on what design won. So there might still be some room for feedback on that one. There was some cool artworks on there. I was very impressed. I'll be honest, free playmat with any Magic artwork on, I'm going to be quite happy. But yeah, you've got about 6 weeks, if you're thinking of levelling up to level 2, to get there and earn your playmat. So good luck. Moving on to the next section, we've got policy and tournament operations with finally a little bit about events afterwards, and then we'll be done. So, big changes in policy that happened. Lapsing triggers. I'm going to bring you a short summary here, and I very much expect you to not take my word for it what exactly mistriggers. How exactly we deal with mistriggers and lapsing triggers these days. I very much expect you to look up the DVD commentary article that Toby Elliott posted and look up the IPG itself and actually look at the original wording of the policy. But to try and keep you all up to speed, here's the best summary that I've got available. The new IPG has brought a whole range of policy and tournament operations questions out this month. We will attempt to explain the different changes and problems that have risen over the month. Mistriggers that give extra turns, they're not considered to be lapsing. They're invisible triggers, they have no impact on the game state, and if you forget about them, they're treated as if they resolved at the appropriate time, and just carry on with the game. The turn gets missed. Replacement effects such as Bloodthirst, which change the way a creature enters the battlefield, is not a trigger at all. But because we're not dealing with a triggered ability, we can't be applying the missed triggers rulings to them. The policy to do with missed triggers, so we don't. They're handled with a game rule violation, just like any other game rule violation that isn't specifically about triggers. Optional triggers that are added on to other lapsing abilities are considered skipped when the lapsing trigger has lapsed. I'm being given an example here. It says, example, Fairy Mechanist's trigger. Let's look it up. Fairy Mechanist. Let's give me a hit and gatherer. What does it say? Fairy Mechanist says, when Fairy Mechanist enters the battlefield, look at the top three cards of your library. So this is the part of the ability that's lapsing. Like, look at the top three cards of your library is something that you're allowed to do, and yeah, it's a beneficial ability kind of thing. You may reveal an artifact card from among them and put it in your hand. Now, because that's an optional part of an ability that's tacked onto a lapsing ability, then it's considered lapsing itself. So, it's not considered lapsing itself. That part is considered to have been skipped at the same point that the lapsing trigger has lapsed. There's a reminder here that Lifelink and Death Touch are no longer triggered abilities. They were at one point, so I can forgive you for believing that they are, but it's been a while now since they have been, so you really should be up to date. Lifelink and Death Touch are no longer trigger abilities, so there is no way that Lifelink or Death Touch could possibly be covered by the missed trigger policy, because they're not triggers. A spectator pointing out triggers at competitive rail would be committing outside assistance. This doesn't change anything with the new IPG. If a spectator sees something wrong, they should stop the match and call a judge. Now, something interesting happened with Grand Prix Manchester in this respect, because a spectator was able to call a judge and have them go over and make a mandatory trigger happen when the player had missed it. The player who would have benefited from the trigger missed it. The other player knew that they didn't have to point it out, because that's the core of the new policy, is that you never have to point your opponent's triggers out. So should this game have just continued that way, the trigger would not have happened, because the person who it would have benefited didn't realise it was there. They'd completely forgotten about it. So it felt a bit weird that the spectator was able to change the course of events in the game just by calling the judge over and making them enforce a mandatory trigger. It's an interesting case. We might see some tweaks to the policy at some point because of that. But as it stands, spectators definitely shouldn't be pointing out triggers, because they'll be committing outside assistance, and they should probably still stop the match and call a judge. This is probably not true at professional rel. There was certainly a... I've certainly had announcements at recent tournaments I've been to that have suggested that spectators actually should just leave well alone. And if they think they've seen a missed trigger, just forget about it. Or just go and find a judge quietly. Rather than stopping a match and finding a judge, actually just go and find a judge and let the game carry on. Finally, if there's a living weapon on the battlefield and there's no germ token attached to it, have a bit of an investigation, have a bit of a snurge around, see what you can find out. Assuming there isn't anything to follow up with, then we can assume that the trigger has been missed. It's not a lapsing trigger because of the action of equipping the equipment to the germ token. So because it's not lapsing, it's put onto the bottom of the stack at the appropriate time. This can mean that if it's pointed out in the middle of declared blockers, that germ will not be able to block because it's not there whilst you're doing the special action of declaring blockers. If that happens, then, well, tough cheese, you missed your trigger. Don't forget that in general, at regular rel, like FNM and the like, you are expected to help and point out your opponent's triggers. At competitive rel, you're only required to look after your own triggers, and you can let your opponent look after theirs. If someone remembers their trigger, and then one of us judges gets to determine whether it's a lapsing trigger or not and resolve the issue. Simple. So they say. It's not that simple, I know that much. But it's a new policy. It seems to be making a lot of headway. Lots of judges have been telling me they like it. There's been a few interesting quirks, but by and large, the policy's going down pretty well. Whew. What other policy questions were raised on the list? Ultra Pro sleeves. There was somebody read the tournament rules a little too closely. There's a sentence that says sleeves with holograms across some or all of the sleeve front are not allowed. So someone said, what? But the Ultra Pro sleeves have got a little holographic dot on it. Have I got one to hand? Yeah, here's a sleeve. I've got some random card in it at the moment. I'll hold it up to the camera so these of you who are watching it. This is an Ultra Pro sleeve. There's a little dot there, which is holographic. And if you were reading the policy very, very closely, you would suggest, perhaps, that Ultra Pro sleeves are not allowed because we do not want holograms across some or all of the sleeve front. Now, I believe this policy is actually to stop the kind of holographic sleeves that made the cards illegible, even on the front side. You just could not read what was going on with the card because the hologram in front of it made it illegible. I haven't ever seen such a sleeve, by the way. I'm told they existed at some point early in Magic's history. They may still exist now. I just haven't ever seen one. Yes, it doesn't apply to that. Ultra Pro sleeves are tournament legal. They're perfectly fine. Andy Hecht made a post about Premier events, head judge requirements, and so on. As we continue moving PTQs and GPTs into new areas, we're encountering more and more TOs and head judges for these events, and so we're needing to put up additional guidance in procedures that, you know, people who know what they've been doing and have been doing what they've been doing for some time know this stuff without really having to say it. There's a fair bit of procedural information, good practice, that isn't expressly detailed, and we'll be trying to change that. The goal is for players to have an enjoyable experience playing Magic in an efficient and fairly operated tournament. Three topics that have come up so far is what's the proper requirement for a head judge at an event? When should or should not postings be standings be posted? And making sure that TOs actually report all of the judges that worked on an event. You need to do this through Wizards Event Reporter. If you don't do it, we don't have a good idea of exactly which judges are putting work in. So we could, at some point, reward you for it, perhaps. But more to the point, like, we don't know that tournaments are being run correctly if judges aren't around. A fourth topic about how to enter late players into a tournament is being reviewed. So that's good news, because that's something that's always bugged me a bit. If you don't get it right, you could end up inadvertently awarding late players a bye, which just encourages them to be late next time, rather than enrolling them with 0 points, which is kind of equivalent to a match loss these days. So it's being reviewed, and we're trying to make sure that the newer TOs and head judges out there have all the information that they need. If you are a new-ish TO or new-ish head judge to an event and you don't quite know what you're doing, then please get in touch with somebody. Your regional coordinator is probably a good choice if you're a judge. Your WPN representative is probably a good choice if you're a TO. There should be somebody who you can think of to talk with. Please do so. If they're not the right person to speak with, they will at least pass you on to the person who is. So, speaking of competitive rail, the sharing of deck lists, the policy was clarified here. In a constructed Grand Prix, the top 8 deck lists are always shared. In a limited Grand Prix, the top 8 deck lists are never shared because we play immediately after the draft. There's no need to share them. Then, if people are scouting during the draft, you need to solve the... scouting problem. In a limited PTQ, you should follow the advice from the GP and say the top 8 deck lists should never be shared. In a constructed PTQ, you've got a choice. Top 8 deck lists can be shared based purely on the organisers and the judges' ability to make this happen. So, yes, we always share them at a GP. I believe this is coverage related. We put the top eight deck lists on the internet anyway, so it would be really annoying if people who had access to the internet could see all of the deck lists, including that of their opponent, and people who didn't have access to the internet would have it kept from them. So, for that reason, we always do share constructed lists at a GP. But a PTQ, it's up to you. You know what will serve your players the best. Dan Kegarice asks where the line is between bluffing and cheating. There are some Jedi mind tricks that players use to gain an edge in the game, and some of them are very much on that line. In fact, I would argue it's the player's job very much to find that line and test us out. There will be hyper-competitive players who will try to get every edge they can in the game, and I cannot blame them because some of our competitions have a lot of money on the line. If you weren't willing to extol every edge you could from the game, then, well, what are you doing at a professional tournament with thousands of dollars on the line? Still, the main instrument that we need to use to evaluate the situation is the communication section of the MTR, keeping in mind that every case will be different. It depends a lot on context and on on-site investigation. There isn't anything wrong about bluffing future game states, but most importantly, it just depends. You've just got to be there. There isn't an easy way to tell people what the difference is between a legal mind trick and an illegal fraudulent claim. Read the communication policy. Remind yourself what free, derived, and private information is, what that means, and what guarantees you have or don't have regarding that information. And go from there. If someone's lied about something they're not allowed to lie about, then they're probably talking fraud. If somebody has hedged a bit and not been totally clear on something that that's actually okay for them to lie about, then that's a decent trick. And if you hear of a good one, well, post it to the list and let us all discuss it. Because, you know, us judges, we love nothing more than discussing a good corner case. Michael Puccio asked a question regarding hidden information in multiplayer games. There are no explicit rules about this. There's no explicit rules about ownership of information in Magic, and certainly not control over its dissemination. There's just access and possession. For any piece of information in a game at any given time, there are players who have access to it and players who don't. However, because the information itself doesn't belong to anybody, nobody can restrict others from disseminating information further. So if player A learns the contents of players B's hand, then they're perfectly free to relate that information to the other players. But that doesn't mean that player B needs to show his hand to everybody. Player A can go, oh, yep, I've looked at his hand and it's got X, Y, and Z in it. And they can tell that to the rest of the table and that's fine. Obviously, they can probably lie about it as well because the hand isn't being revealed. So, turns out multiplayer Magic is a hugely political game. Who knew? Maria Zujeva brought us a situation regarding dredging extra cards. A player casts Jace's Ingenuity, or any similar card really that has a draw effect, draws two cards, and then dredges two Stinkweed Imps, so dredges a total of 10 cards into their graveyard. That's a total of four cards, whereas Jace's Ingenuity only lets you draw three. So they've kind of drawn an extra card, but kind of not, because they replace the draw with something else. I'm sure you can see the problem here. So they realise something went wrong and they call the judge. Simply, it is drawing extra cards because although they replaced the draw, they did the actions for drawing four cards. But since the identity of the drawn card is known to everybody, then the downgrade's an option because, well, you've seen exactly what got dredged. Applying the remedy for looking at extra cards can solve the issue of what to do with the second set of dredged cards, just shuffle them into the random portion of the library. So that will work out quite nicely. So, yes, because you're almost certainly here, you're going to be able to apply drawing extra cards, but downgrade it because of a known identity, and therefore you get the warning and fix the extra seen cards by shuffling them away. That works quite nicely to me. Nice solution to a slightly tricky question. Michael Swagger again brings us the situation of the missing hand.
It was an improper mulligan and shuffling in hands. There were two different scenarios. In one of them, the active player chooses to keep their hand, and then after their opponent mulligans down to five, they mulligan again. And in a similar situation, they just accidentally shuffle their hand after searching their deck for something. Like, they use a fetch land and accidentally shuffle their hand into the library. There isn't an official guideline for these cases, but the consensus seems to be that the first scenario is improper drawing at start of game. And for the latter scenario, you're just going to let the game carry on and that player has no cards in hand. That seems quite harsh to me. A player just incorrectly resolved the fetch land and they lost their hand. But really, we don't have any other part of policy to rely on. And, I mean, seriously, who cracks a fetch land and shuffles their whole hand into their library? It's going to be pretty awkward to recover the game at that point. So we have to do our best. And it turns out our best here really is to do nothing and just leave the hand where it is. Who knows? They might be able to bring themselves back into the game somehow. Mike Clark brings us an FNM situation where somebody brought a completely illegal deck to their first standard FNM because they assembled it from an old deck builder's toolkit and they don't really know what standard is. This is surprisingly common, actually. If you're not proactive about getting format information out there, then someone can turn up and go, yeah, I've got a deck of Magic cards. What do you mean it's illegal? How can I have an illegal deck? These are all Magic cards. What are you talking about? In this situation, after removing the illegal cards, there's only 46 left. So adding 14 basic lands, which I think is like exactly what the jar suggests as a fix, would be pretty miserable. Giving someone 14 extra lands in a deck is just going to make it somewhat unplayable. We think it's perfectly fine to deviate here because regular rail, because FNM, it's about customer service, it's about customer retention. You're talking about somebody who's going to be at FNM for the first time. That's the only way they could possibly make this mistake, is by being here totally new and totally devoid of knowledge of like what format definition even means. What does standard even mean? So get them in the tournament, get them playing. Just replace those 14 cards with something else. You're not going to be talking about damaging the integrity of the tournament here. This player getting involved and getting to have fun is far more important. Alvaro Ibanez asked us, who decides the rules enforcement level of a tournament? Well, it's set in advance of the event and it's set by the organiser. Any organiser who's running a competitive event is recommended to use a level 1 judge, an actual certified head judge, but it isn't required. Any organiser who's running professional events is recommended to use a level 3 judge or higher, but again, it's not required. It does, however, need to be clearly announced and advertised as a service to the players coming and signing up. You can run different rules enforcement levels in different rounds, so long as that's also clearly announced. Planeswalker points don't change based on rel, though. If you decide to run something at regular or competitive, it doesn't change what planeswalker points are given out by that tournament. Also, everything I've just said applies only to random tournaments that you've decided to sanction. If you're talking about premier events, such as pre-releases, FNMs, Grand Prix trials, and etc., then they have a mandated REL. FNM is run at regular REL. You have to run it at regular REL. There is no such thing as a competitive REL FNM. It's not allowed. Michael again brought us questions about top 8 deck checks and finding decklist deck problems in something that he called a courtesy deck check. All we have here is a note to remind us that policy has no provision for courtesy deck checks. The IPG does tell us that if an infraction is discovered in between games, so in this example you're checking someone's deck before the quarterfinals have actually started, but after the Swiss portion of the tournament has ended, then the infractions should be applied to the next game that will be played. So if you determine that somebody has been cheating, they can be disqualified. If you determine that somebody has committed an error that requires a game loss, you can apply that game loss in the quarterfinals. And if the tournament's over, even if even if the tournament is actually completely finished, and you then learn of something which would have led you to disqualify somebody for cheating, you can still enter that investigation, you can still disqualify them, even though the tournament's over. It is worth doing this, definitely. We must be stringent and firm in the enforcement of cheating penalties. It's not just the integrity of that tournament, which is over, but it's to do with that player's future performance in events. Someone needs to take a line as to whether this guy needs to be suspended. The players around you need to know that you will come down on cheating with the force required for such a serious allegation. Basically, just because the tournament's over, it's no excuse. Get that investigation done and get the disqualification report in. Finally, in the policy section of this month's issue, we have two knowledge pool scenarios. They're both bronze scenarios, meaning they're aimed at level one judges. One was brought to us by Dustin Deleu and one by Ben McDowell. I'm just going to point out the scenarios to you and let you have a think about them and let you look up the answers at your leisure. Let's see, is this going to come up? Yeah, here it is. So the first one was, at a standard Grand Prix trial, which is run at competitive REL, Adam controls a blood gift demon. After Nadine passes her turn, Adam untaps, draws a card, and immediately proceeds to the declare attacker step. He attacks with both blood gift demon and some other creatures, and Nadine casts a go for the throat, targeting blood gift demon, to which Adam responds by casting Undying Evil, remarking, "Hey, this badass is too good to simply let him die." Right after that, he realises he did not remember the trigger of the demon and calls for a judge. When you arrive at the table, you hear Nadine sigh, "Too bad, I already hoped you wouldn't remember and you'd miss the extra card." Lovely scenarios to do with missed triggers there. So what are the infractions, penalties and fixes that you would apply to that? For those of you just listening along, Blood Gift Demon has a triggered ability at the beginning of your upkeep. Target player draws a card and loses a life. Go for the Throat, just a spell that destroys target non-artifact creature, and Undying Evil is something that gives a creature undying to the end of turn. So yeah, the question, are there any infractions, penalties and fixes that you'd apply to that situation? Second knowledge pool scenario that was brought up says, oh, it's Adam and Nadine again. At a competitive rules enforcement level event, Adam controls Thrun the Last Troll. Nadine controls a Garrick Relentless with two loyalty counters. Adam declares Thrun as an attacker, and Nadine has no responses. Nadine moves to mark down a life change, and Adam stops her, saying, I was attacking Garrick. Nadine calls a judge. What's the appropriate infraction, penalty, and additional fix? The scenario had an unintended mistake in, actually, I'm led to believe. It said that Garrick Relentless had two loyalty counters on it. That actually means there's a missed trigger kind of in process. Let's say that Garrick Relentless actually has three loyalty counters, and that skips that part. If you spotted that a Garrick Relentless on the table with two loyalty counters should have something happen to it, then give yourself a cookie, because that was an amazing catch at the time. And yes, I was very impressed that anyone noticed the mistake in that one. So yes, Garrick Relentless, three loyalty counters. Adam attacks, Nadine has no response, Nadine goes to mark down a life change, and Adam stops her. Any infraction, penalty and fixes that you'd apply to that one would be well received. Cool. Okay, so having dealt with the two knowledge pool scenarios, they're the two scenarios for you to think about and discuss. And the answers are available on the list, or obviously you'll find them in the April edition of Magic Judge Monthly. I'll tack them onto the very end of this stream as well, so you've got next few minutes to be thinking about those. In April, we had Grand Prix Manchester, which was head judged by Kevin Desprez, Carlos Ho, and the UK regional coordinator, the acting regional coordinator, was myself. Thoroughly enjoyed GP Manchester, and it was utterly fantastic. In May, we have the Pro Tour Avacyn Restored coming up in Barcelona. That will be head judged by Ricardo Tessitore,
with the judges being managed by Christiana Dionisia, which was, I'm looking forward to seeing both of those. I'm really looking forward to this Pro Tour. It's the second of the new style, and it'll be interesting. It'll be the first one I've judged. Well, it'll be very interesting to see what happens. GP Malmo is coming up on May 19th and 20th, which will be head judged by Jürgen Bert and Frank Wehrmann, who I haven't seen around for a while. Also, fantastic judge. One of the old guard, probably, by now. If you ever get a chance to talk to him about various investigations he's had in the past, then it's well worth sharing a beer or two with him. The regional coordinator is Johanna Vertanen, and she's very excited about GP Malmo as well. Then we have GP Neapolis is coming up on May 19th and 20th also. That's the same weekend as Malmo. That's being head judged by Jason Lemahieu, with Stephen Briggs acting as the regional coordinator there. Sorry, I'm saying acting as the regional coordinator. He is the regional coordinator there. We also, later in May, on the 26th and 27th, we have GP Los Angeles, which will be head judged by Toby Elliott, with the regional coordinator there is Sean Catanese. And that is it for this month's issue of the Magic Judge Monthly. I'll give a shout out to the Globetrotters. Who did we have in Manchester? John Aldifer from USA joined us in Manchester, and that was very well received. I really enjoyed seeing John. Great work at the event, John. I'm sure you enjoyed it. I'm pretty sure he's the only guy being credited as a Globetrotter to Manchester. I'm not sure how far everyone else travelled, but we don't have a Globetrotter section for the Pro Tour. In Malmo, we have Alexei Gusev coming over from America and Alejandro Raggio from Argentina. I remember Alejandro from the Pro Tour in San Juan. He's also a fantastically fun guy to hang out with. So you're in for a treat there, any of you who are going to be seeing him in Malmo. And heading to Minneapolis, we have Eric Dickerman is heading to Minneapolis from Costa Rica. And now I understand why Christian was asking me to give a shout out to the Globetrotters, because Christian Garilovic from Austria will be heading to GP Minneapolis. Cristiano Dionisio from Italy and Thales Bittencourt from Brazil will be heading there. I'm being told to qualify as a Globetrotter, you have to be heading to the GP from a different continent. Nice one. GP Los Angeles is being visited again by Eric Dickerman from Costa Rica and again by Christian Gavrilovic from Austria. Also Maria Zrieva from Russia will be joining them. That's how dedicated these guys are to travelling around the world for Magic events. Okay, let's go back to those knowledge pool scenarios just briefly. The scenario involving the Bloodgift Demon. Bloodgift Demon is not a lapsing ability, so it will be put on the stack and a target will be chosen. The controller of the Bloodgift Demon will be given a warning for mistrigger, but their opponent, even though they specifically did not point out the trigger, that's perfectly allowed these days. You can't give them any kind of penalty for anything. So please don't. Adam gets his mistrigger warning, and Nadine is maybe a bit sad because Adam gets his card, but yeah, no penalty for her. In the Planeswalker problem, in MTR 4.2, which details tournament shortcuts, it says that if an opponent controls a Planeswalker, I've jumbled up all my words here. The active player attacks, the opponent controls a Planeswalker. When she writes down the change in her life totals, the attacking player states that they actually intended to kill the Planeswalker. The tournament shortcut in MTR 4.2 says that you are assumed to be attacking the player unless you say otherwise. So she does take the life loss, you don't attack the Planeswalker, and there are no penalties to be given out because nothing was said. So just the assumption stands, and the guy who intended to attack the Planeswalker, Garrick, well, he doesn't get to, and he learns to be more specific in future. That's it. I have hit the end. It was a long one. 1 hour and 20 minutes worth of knowledge brought to you through the Magic Judge Monthly in April. If you're a regular visitor to my stream, come back next week for hopefully a worthwhile stream on replacement effects. If you're just here for the Magic Judge Monthly, I'll see you next month for covering all of May's action. Thank you very much for visiting. Love you all. See you again soon. Bye-bye.